From a nightclub at the end of the world, it is Sunday, April 29th. How'd we make it this far, 2012? Mike Rupert. And it's just a beautiful day here in Sebastopol, Northern California. I spent 3 hours outside today, whacking, working on the plants, watering. We've got the springtime, man. This is the time when you get busy and when everything just gets into gets busy growing, and it's I feel good, and that's an important thing. And I hope a lot of you out there are doing similar things this time now, connecting yourself again with the ground and the earth and something solid, because there's sure a lot of stuff out there that doesn't look very solid. I want to start off the show tonight. It's going to be just you and me. We'll take calls after the bottom of the hour, calls and emails. If you want to email me a question after the station break, send that to lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Or you can call in at 888-874-4888, again, after the half-hour break. But I wanted to kind of set a theme, and it really is cool to follow Gary Null with the great message he closed his show with. It was just so perfect. He was talking about authenticity, being who you are. Reminds me of a line from Hamlet: "Above all else, to thine own self be true," which is where power comes from. But I want to set this up with a clip, because what's becoming clear to me is that we are at a place where reason doesn't give us answers. We are at a place where thinking in binary ones and zeros and Cartesian logic, all the numbers now add up to we're screwed on many different levels. We'll talk about that later. But there's something about heart, and what we're going to play now is just some amazing film mixing work done by our dear friend Windermere Assassin, Lee Death Care Nelson in the UK, from a video he did called Why Occupy. I want you to listen to this segment, and it sets the tone for the way I want to try to look at the world's problems tonight. Let's go.
The audience that I want to reach is those 30 and under, because you are a generation that has been thoroughly screwed. You are a generation that is being left with the wreckage, the ruin, the debt, the pollution, the collapse, the wreckage of human industrial civilization. Einstein writes, quote, now this is where we're going to start to slay some gods, but we're also going to free you from traps that were built into your minds a long time ago. He writes, in any case, one's notion of spirit is that of something separate and unworldly that yet can miraculously intervene in the material affairs and even animate and direct them in some mysterious way. It's hugely ironic and hugely significant that the one thing on the planet most closely resembling the foremost conception of the divine is money. It is an invisible, immortal force that surrounds and steers all things, omnipotent and even limitless. An invisible hand that it is said makes the world go around. Yet money today is an abstraction. At most, symbols on a piece of paper, but usually mere bits in a computer. It exists in a realm far removed from materiality, and in that realm, it is exempt from nature's most important laws. For it does not decay and return to the soil as all other things do, but it is rather preserved, changeless in its vaults and computer files, ever growing thanks to interest. It bears the properties of eternal preservation and everlastingness, both of which are profoundly unnatural. Looking down from the Olympian heights, Eisenstein writes, the financiers called themselves masters of the universe, channeling the power of the god they serve to bring fortune and ruin or ruin upon the masses, to literally move mountains, raise forests, change their course, to change the course of rivers, cause the rise and fall of nations. Like the clergy of a dying religion, they exhort their followers to greater sacrifice while blaming their misfortunes either on sin, greedy bankers and irresponsible consumers, or on the mysterious whims of God, the financial markets. What we call recession, earlier cultures might have called God abandoning the world. Money is disappearing, and with it, another property of spirit, the animating force of the human realm. At this writing, all over the world, machines stand idle, Eisenstein writes. Factories have ground to a halt, construction equipment that sits derelict in the yard. Parks and libraries are closing, and millions go homeless and hungry, while the housing units stand vacant and food rots in the warehouses. Yet all the human and material inputs to build the houses, distribute the food, and run the factories still exist. It is rather something immaterial, that animating spirit which has fled. Money. He continues, we do not realize that our concept of the divine has attracted to it a god that fits that concept, and given it sovereignty over the earth by divorcing soul from flesh, spirit from matter, and God from nature. We have installed a ruling power that is soulless, alienating, ungodly, and unnatural. So when I, Eisenstein, says, speak of money being sacred, I am not invoking a supernatural agency to infuse sacredness to the inert, mundane objects of nature. I am rather reaching back to an earlier time before the divorce of matter and spirit. Eisenstein writes, the financial crisis we are facing today arises from the fact that there is almost no social, cultural, natural, and spiritual capital left to convert into money. Centuries of near continuous money creation have left us so destitute that we have nothing left to sell. I might add, we sold our souls a long time ago. So let me be clear today, as I stand here on this podium waiting for retribution, I am here to kill your God today. I'm here to spit in the face of a God that separated man from this planet by giving us dominion. Because it was in the separation and charging the human race and saying we had the right to rule over nature that has made everything else possible and has made us accept and swallow an infinite growth monetary paradigm that even as it's dying, we are conditioned to look to for our salvation, even while it's standing on our chest and strangling us.
That was like about the first 7 minutes or so of an incredible tape called Why Occupy, which you can find on the CollapseNet homepage in the yellow bar right up at the top, or you can also find it on YouTube. Many deep thanks to Lee Nelson in Great Britain in the UK, a dear friend, for who produced that. That was me giving a speech in Portland, Oregon, without the music, on September the 11th of last year. Lee did an amazing piece of video work with this. The video that goes with this is absolutely breathtaking. And at the end of it, it's about, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes, maybe longer, but not much. And but at the end of it, it ends with the best visual portrayal I have ever seen of what I expect to happen when we find the 100th monkey. And that's kind of a very important theme tonight, because living in the world that we live in, if we live only with Cartesian reason and René Descartes and all of that, and we're screwed. We're screwed beyond hope. There is no point in even trying. Last week we had an incredible guest on the show, who I feel a strong kinship with, Dr. Guy McPherson, a former professor emeritus at the University of Arizona, climatologist. A brilliant guy who I just like his personality and his mindset, because I could hear and I could feel his angst, the cognitive dissonance squared that comes with seeing stuff head on. Let me read you an abstract from an article that we talked about last week on the show. It's very short. Global extinction within one human lifetime as a result of spreading atmospheric Arctic methane heat wave and surface firestorm. This was a study done by the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. It is posted at arcticnews.blogspot.com. It'll be on the World News Desk at CollapseNet tomorrow. Here's the abstract. Although the sudden high-rate Arctic methane release in Svalbard in late 2010 data set applies to only a short time interval, similar sudden methane concentration peaks also occur at Barrow Point, and the effects of a major methane buildup has been observed using all the major scientific observation systems. Giant fountains, torches, plumes of methane entering the atmosphere up to 1 kilometer across have been seen on the East Siberian Shelf. This methane eruption data is so consistent and aerially extensive that when combined with methane gas warming potentials, Permian extinction event temperatures, and methane lifetime data, it paints a frightening picture of the beginning of the now uncontrollable global warming-induced destabilization of the subsea Arctic methane hydrates on the shelf and slope, which started in late 2010. I'll de-science that for you in a second. The process of methane release will accelerate exponentially, release huge quantities of methane into the atmosphere, and lead to the demise of all life on the Earth before the middle of this century. What they're talking about with the methane hydrates are in the seabeds, where they have been frozen, you know, for many, many thousands of years. Methane hydrates are ice crystals that exist, storing, locking away enormous amounts of methane. And as that thaws, we get many columns, torches, plumes of methane going directly up into the atmosphere. We had a story on the World News Desk recently at CollapseNet. I think there were like 10 or 15 of them observed more than a mile across in one location in the Arctic. This is the kind of stuff that you can't fix if you stay in the frame of mind that excludes things like heart, matter, spirit, authenticity, or, here's a nice word, coherence. But on the other hand, you know, well, let me just add to that. We've talked a lot about Fukushima here. We know that reactor 2 is out of control. The radiation is so high outside the vessel that it even disables the robots they send in. There are no robots yet designed capable of handling those levels of radiation. The Japanese government's going bankrupt, but they're going to nationalize TEPCO, and then Building 4 has more spent fuel rods containing more radiation than has been released in all nuclear activity since we started playing with the atom. On any different front, we're cooked. And yet, notice something about human behavior. It's that part of human behavior. the heart and the soul and the spirit that I want to reach to tonight. Now, let me give you something to cheer you up. I had said for about a decade incessantly that if the U.S. And Israel attacked Iran, it would result in the end of life. And that's what's happened. It would result in a global nuclear holocaust. And that holocaust appears to have been prevented by human action. I'm very proud that Iron Collapse, that played a very small part, but there was a global uprising. There was a global joining of consciousness in which Russia and China said, no, you will not overthrow President Assad, you will not attack Iran, or else it will mean war. But then the rest of the world joined in, most notably the BRICS, Brazil, Russia was already there, India, and the whole world speaking, I think, not necessarily as nation states, but I think perhaps in their consciousness, just from the standpoint of being a human being, said no. Now, the Los Angeles Times, 2 days ago, ran a story, very clear, saying, let me just read you the first sentence. And what would be a significant concession, Obama administration officials say they could support allowing Iran to maintain a crucial element of its disrupted nuclear program if Tehran took other major steps. But the headline of the story was concession. Concession. And I have, now, if you have followed me for any length of time, you know how judiciously I have, throughout my career, footnoted, documented, and sourced everything. I have been, maybe 5-6 times in the course of the last 15 years, I have cited unnamed credible sources. But I have it from two sources who are definitely in positions to know that recently, within a week or two ago, President Barack Obama made the decision to stand down for good on an attack on Iran. And if you're listening, Mr. President, good. But that is a victory. That is something that was very empowering for me, in spite of the fact that all of this other data is out there. It shows that when enough human beings in enough places come together saying the same thing, things can change. And I, for one, thoroughly believe that if there is and when there is a new age of human existence, it will be very empathic. It will be very heart-centered and not head-centered. And there are great lessons in all of this, because the music that you heard in that first cut is very inspiring. It opens places in your heart, and music has that power. And heart is essential, because there are times when, think of all the great hero stories of so many won medals of honor. What was it? It was their heart that saw them through that. And that's what we collectively as a species need to get in touch with and start using a lot more than our head, because I can judge the results of what our head does by the world around me, absent heart and soul. And there's great lessons in that. And one of the first things that's really important for that is letting go. I have never been able to, as long as I've been living a spiritual path, and as long as I have been functioning, what I have learned was that you have to let go of everything, because as long as you got your fist closed holding on to something, nothing else can come in and take its place, which might, in this case, be solutions that you hadn't considered. Remember that miracles can happen without your permission. So all of that weaves very nicely into what's happened with us at CollapseNet. We were in some very, very tight places, and I think to a certain extent we still are, but we see a way out now. And it all came from the way I was looking at the problem. And it's amazing, too, that once you get out of your own brain and you look at a problem from a fresh perspective, unencumbered by ego, that you can see all kinds of solutions. I think there's going to be some Very, very gratifying announcements about CollapseNet within the next week or two. I'm not going to say anything until we have all that done, but it'll be a win-win for a great many people. And I think you can be assured that you're going to continue to get the same incredible news and analysis on CollapseNet that you have been and that you have come to count on. I'll hold my breath on that, but that all came as a result of stepping out myself and us stepping outside of ourselves for a little bit. Now, in the context of that, we're going to play a song, and then we're going to go to the station break and come back. I got some other talking points, but we're going to open it up. I want to hear what you guys want to talk about tonight. The song tonight kind of goes hand in hand with this, and it sounds like a depressing song, but what I've learned throughout my whole life is you have to hit a bottom before things change, and the human race, this planet, needs to hit a bottom collectively if it's going to wake up. And until there's a bottom, there's not any hope. All you're doing is rearranging the deck chairs. There has to be a surrender and a capitulation to open the consciousness to other things. So here's A Weird Kind of Sense.
Oh, what a mess we left you. Oh, what a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess. Posting on tea and champagne. Nothing left but a dried stain. Camped by the fire in formal time. Under the change of a changing world of vain. Oh, what a mess we left you. Oh, what a mess we left you. This is not tomorrow.
Take as Gary was talking about in the last show, you know, take whatever works for you, but pray that you're aware of the fact when it's not working for you anymore, because that's the moment when you're ready to change. And we don't all do, not all of us, and certainly I hope not our listeners do, damaging things like that, because we have a lot of other good things that work for us. And you find all of that on CollapseNet. You find it with Carolyn Baker, who writes a great column for us there every week. You find it with the insight and all the information we bring you in news and commentary for Post Petroleum Human. The song, Weird Kind of Sense, was New White Trash, www.newwhitetrash.com. I sang on that. I wrote the song with Doug Lewis and other members of the band, and we came back with Take These, and that just was kind of a tip to Gary Nolan, what he was talking about at the end of his show right before mine, which is how we get into these really, really dysfunctional, bad habit patterns. We fall into ruts, and we furnish them. We actually take out second mortgages on the ruts that we live in. Yes, we do. And even though we know that they're not working, and we feel frustrated, and but there are ways out. And usually, almost always, from my experience, the way out is through a change in consciousness. But let's go back to this theme tonight of things being hopeless. And I come from a spiritual tradition that kind of says the more hopeless things feel, the better the chances that something other than our heads can work on the field here. This is from Want China Times, which is a very serious publication. It's in Taiwan, and they track China, mainland China, through this. The headline is kind of is surprising. Europe now second biggest market using Chinese currency for settlements. In other words, Europe is the second biggest market dumping the dollar. You're not hearing that from Barack Obama, are you? Excuse me, you're not hearing that on any of the mainstream news, but the fact is that the flight on the dollar is everybody's getting out about as fast as they can without tanking it, which brings us back to the whole economic situation. I'm so tired of talking about this. But, you know, it's necessary for a little while longer. I mean, Europe is getting worse by the day. Governments are falling like dominoes. The Dutch government fell. The Czech government fell. Suicides are just soaring again in Greece. And nobody's going to fix anything there. That's beyond repair. So we have the Fukushima situation, the economic situation. We have the climactic situation. And all of this adds up to the fact that there is no hope. And I've had a pretty tough life. I've had to meet a lot of challenges in my life, and sometimes the challenges actually beat me, and I had to resurrect after that happened. And little resurrection reincarnation doesn't hurt anybody. You can do that in your head without having to lose your body. That's happened a few times. But my experience says, and my experience of watching others, other heroic people on the field, I'm hoping to have as a guest next week on the show, Michael Reynolds, from the film Garbage Warrior. It's just amazing film. And he was in the movie Anima Mundi with me, and I really identify with him. He had a great line in the movie. He said, you know, I realized that I was in this herd of buffalo that was stampeding toward a cliff, and I realized that if I was going to keep from dying, I had to change the direction of the whole herd. Well, tell me, I identify with that. Got some other things to talk about, but right now we have a caller, Andrew from California. Andrew, how are you? Are you there?
Yeah, it's Michael.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I was listening to you last night, and you were talking about force field investigations. You're going to talk about that?
You cut out there a little bit. I couldn't hear the question. It was garbled. Could you say it again?
Yeah, you said last week that you were going to talk about the source field investigations today.
Mm-hmm.
Show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm probably saving that for a larger show. But since you bring it up now, let me go into that. It's kind of interesting that you brought it up. I'll answer the question. You can hang up, because I'm going to be talking for quite a while here. It's a book that I recommended that I have read recently. Now, this has to do with a term called coherence, which I equate to honor. I've been like this grumpy old nasty custodian for a long time, and I never really understood for why it was that I felt so intuitively that I had to do this. But throughout my career, whenever I have seen good ideas come up, you know how we say that disinformation, in order to be effective, has to be 90% accurate, which is true. And there are a great many secrets being withheld from the world at large. Well, I received this book in a medicine bundle, and I'm not going to do the whole book tonight. It's too long. I really recommend you get it and look at it. But first of all, aside, as a result of many places I had been in my studies and travels, both as an intellectual left brain guy, the journalist, the detective with the footnotes and the calculator and that and that. But you see, I have this other side, and the idea is to integrate both. This spoke first to my heart, but as I read through it, I recognized a great many things that I had come across through my own travels that I knew to be true. But I also saw some exceedingly good science in there. And, you know, I'm of the school of thought, the same school of thought as Albert Einstein and Carl Jung, who both said, once you know there's a God, it doesn't make any difference whether you believe in one or not. I kind of think that's true. I approached, well, I just ate the book up, and I went through the book front to back, notes all over the place. Yeah, I get, okay. And I checked every name and every source, and I couldn't find a single person throughout my long career that I recognized as a con man, disinfo, somebody peddling stuff. That was a completely different situation than I had with the movie Thrive, which I think is a piece of junk. And yet it has pretty much the same basic kernel of truth, but the energy is completely different. And what did I find in the movie Thrive? Several kind of unsavory characters and conspiracy theories I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. Those are thrown into poison the well. But I find this guy Daniel Sheehan in the movie Thrive. And Daniel Sheehan, I outed Daniel Sheehan in 2004 in a story called Beyond Bush 2, which is on the old From the Wilderness website. That's fromthewilderness.com. And I presented, evidence and records and witness testimony from Daniel Sheehan destroyed the Christic Institute lawsuit deliberately after raising hundreds of thousands of dollars and taking years of people's lives during Iran-Contra. We had an amazing case against the CIA for dealing drugs. That's the whole story that played out through Gary Webb and my confrontation with John Deutsch. Well, Daniel Sheehan destroyed that, and then Daniel Sheehan also destroyed an amazing lawsuit that had to do with the murder of Colonel Jim Sabo at El Toro Marine Air Station in 1992, I believe. He was the chief of air operations, an honorable warrior, and he caught CIA flying the cocaine, 2,000 and 3,000 kilos at a time, and C-130s onto the base. And Daniel Sheehan destroyed that case, too, and he's had 8 years to sue me. But I've had this rule about things that I read or watch and evaluate. If I find somebody without honor in the middle of that, the whole thing is tainted. I kind of turned that thing on its head, and I think it's a good standard. Well, I went through source field investigations, and I could not find anybody in a long career that I recognized as a disinfo artist, and that's good, because otherwise you wind up in the same camp with people like David Icke. You wind up with people like people that you just can't hang out with because this was good standalone science absent any of that, and it resonated. And the essence of the book, this is really hard to try to do that. The essence of the book is that Einstein's unified field theory was an attempt to unify the subjective and the objective, to find the one thing or what it was that connected everything in the universe, matter, antimatter, energy, empty space, from the ultimate micro to the indescribable macro, but especially the subjective and the objective is the best way to describe it. And the physics backing this up, I found to be, and I'm not a physicist, but this was well sourced, and it made a great deal of sense, was utterly compelling, along with that historical record. And we have asked the question, and I have on this show before, why is it that prophecies do a better job of telling us what's happening in our world today than the mainstream media, which upon which we spend billions of dollars? They can't tell us anything that's true, and yet, you would have to be foolish not to see some connection going on here and kind of be scratching your head, and especially since we're past the point of no return, what's the loss? And in that I found in the book very clear evidence. Now, here is where I have to go back and remind people of my childhood. I was born into a household where my mother had been a senior cryptanalyst for the Army Security Agency, and my father, a decorated Air Force veteran who had flown in interceptors over the North Pole during the Korean War, had become the liaison between Martin Marietta, CIA, and the U.S. Air Force on the Titan IIIC, which put up all of the keyhole spy satellites. And I got to grow up around Dad meeting former Nazi rocket scientists and having some incredible scientists over for dinner. And this is stuff, and there was stuff mentioned in source field investigations, and I said, I remember them talking about, oh, that, yeah. Okay, so anyway, what this book did was, above all else, it inspired me. It inspired me, because if you sit back and look at the hard gray facts here for too long, you get to a point where you say, well, might as well check out, might as well give up, might as well party, what the heck, there's nothing, you know. And that's the one thing that human beings, I think the best of us, are incapable of doing. I just got an email. This is very cool. Perfect timing. I say that's something else, but we'll get more deeply into that in the future shows. We're going to have different guests, but we're also going to have the same kind of guests. Believe me, I have not in any way, shape, or form abandoned the critical thinking which got me here, but what I have realized is that we need to stop thinking that way if we're going to survive, because this is all it gets us. From Windermere Assassin, Lee Doth Care Nelson, who made the video that I played the clip for at the beginning of the show. Hi, buddy. First, thank you for the mention, and I'm currently working on a new one about Occupy and police brutality, and I'll get the first look. Well, thank you. So he writes in a short paragraph about the topic. He writes, my thoughts are this regarding tonight's topic. I will do it by an example. If civilization lived in the future, underground, because we, their forefathers, saw fit to destroy the planet, but technology has carried on and created a true global community, and we're able to travel back through time, then wouldn't you want to send someone back to warn the planet of our actions and consequences? We all come from the one Big Bang, so the only thing out there is us. Apocalypse, in Greek, is the unrevealing, and maybe this actually is the revealing, not the unrevealing. Apocalypse in Greece truly is the revealing, and maybe this is when we get positive and undeniable contact from those in the stars. There's a festival this year in Southern America, Peru, I believe it's called, the year we meet ourselves. This, to me, is a more hopeful solution to what the reality could be. I do believe a change of consciousness is coming, as do I, but there aren't many things that could create that mass awakening other than ET or a catastrophe, and I'm going for the ET. Well, now here we get into, thank you for that. The only thing out there is us, and the apocalypse does mean the great revealing. And parenthetically here, I should note that from all my studies, all of the prophecies relating to the end time, and we're not just talking Mayan. We had a great thing on CollapseNet this week. When in doubt, ask a Mayan. And you know, you can Google that, and it'll take you to what a Mayan actually says this is all about. But there are Hopi prophecies, there are Sumerian, and they all agree on the time and the events with very, very minor differences. But there's not a one of them that says it's the end of the world and everything dies. We need to remember that. because you know everybody who's talked about prophecies, the first thing that the infinite growth paradigm, the one that has kept a great too many secrets to itself, wants you to think. It's not the end of the world. The prophecies don't say everything. Every one of them says that there is a radical change, a massive transformation, and this is the ushering in of a golden era. Now, I could, if I were really cynical, I could sit back and I could just say, well, I would submit prima facie, Your Honor, that the prophecies are more accurate than mainstream news, so we might just allow for the fact that the prophecies might also be correct about predicting a massive, sudden change in consciousness, maybe miracles. I believe miracles. I'm not selling any denomination here, but all of that coming at this time. So the prophecies, whether you talk about the Book of Revelations or the Upanishads or wherever you find this, it does talk a lot about a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth and suffering. And you know what? I would submit also, everybody just take a look out your window. Just look at the world around you and say, yeah, that's happening and it's getting worse. That there might actually be something. There is something here to hope for. And other than that, for the time being, I would suggest that you get the book and read it yourself. Read it not just with your intellectual head, but read it also with your heart. I'm not going to suspend my critical judgment and my critical thinking. I haven't done that. I've been using it pretty sharply on the World News Desk at CollapseNet lately. And that's not going anywhere. But what the Mayan prophecy, and there is a video that's on the yellow bar at CollapseNet right now called The Eagle and the Condor, which is also rooted in the ancient teachings, and I guess that's where I'm different than all the religions, or we of this consciousness, not I. We of this consciousness are not calling for a new religion. We are not. All religions, I believe, are going to be tanked in a very short order. All religions are going to be turned on their head. But going back to the native spiritual wisdom that was here 40, 50, 100,000 years ago, and their archaeological artifacts going back way before the 5,000 years that we're told recorded history is. There's a lot. There was stuff going on before that too. There was wisdom, and certainly the human race has it. We're going back to that consciousness, and this that consciousness that governed our forebears. Our ancestors, 40,000 years ago, my great-great, multi-million great-grandfather, Ugg, was running around in the wilderness, and I guarantee you he was not saying, why am I out here in the woods having this wilderness experience? He was completely at home, 100% integrated, seamlessly a part of a living ecosystem. He had in his consciousness no separation. Between himself, between the dirt, the water, the stars, the food, the deer, the plants, the weather. And it was from that state of consciousness that he lived. And I do believe, and I see this happening very clearly on a great many levels, that this awakening is taking place. And I know that a lot of you out there who come to this show every week are of that consciousness. We are of that consciousness, and we do not give up. And if I live too long, there's going to be some changes coming up for me, good ones, all good ones, all good ones, I think, for everybody involved. When I live too long in that world of the news stories and the analysis, I've been very good at, I get real unbalanced, and it takes a great deal of effort. But the message that I'm hearing now, right now, very clearly in my life, with results immediately following, is to live from your heart now, especially. We all need to live from the heart. Because I don't care if you are the most diehard atheist, hate anything spiritual, person in the world, I guarantee you, even those people will find parts in movies where they cry, will find something hopeful in a fairy tale that inspires them. That's the only little seed that's there, and I don't think it's missing from anybody, but a great many of us live in that a lot more than that, and I'm going to be doing more of that. I have a sneaking suspicion there's another book coming out of me soon. I'm not going to say anything more on that, but it's time to sit down and do some serious writing. And in order to write like a book, some of the deep writing that I did over the decades, I have to kind of get away. I have to get into a place where the muse and I can get to know each other again. The muse. Muse. Music. Muse. Heart. Soul. Ones and zeros can't measure heart and soul, can they? Ones and zeros can't even conceive of them. And that's why this world is as screwed up as it is. You still have out there economists and politicians shouting growth, growth, growth. You still have lunatics out there printing money who have an absolute total disconnect with the reality of the world that they live in. And I believe it's willful and I believe it's intentional. One of the themes that has come up over the years, well, let me take a couple of them. Let's throw UFOs in this together, and the other is free energy. Do I know UFOs exist? You're damn right I do. You know? I've seen them, but my father was in interceptors over the North Pole. And I got to hear some things about that because of the where I lived. I had a Q clearance. I was given a Q clearance when I was 18 years old because I lived in the same house with my parents. That's in I have that in the book Crossing the Rubicon. And so there are things that I heard and I remembered. And is there such a thing as free energy? And if you have listened to me for any length of time, over any number of years, you know my reaction when I hear free energy. I cringe, I turn red, and because the question was asked from a state of consciousness about free energy that could be plugged into a 2012 Ford Explorer or your BMW or the infinite growth paradigm. It's always been about the change of consciousness. I do know that a great many, some would call them technologies. I kind of think that's a misnomer. I think it's wisdom about access to healing energies. Everybody ever hear of a spiritual healer? They have access to energies, and they work. You know, these things need to be explained, and anything that attempts to deal with our world without including all of that is doomed to give an incorrect picture. So I believe that there is awareness of things that can be done with energy that could not, it won't save the infinite growth paradigm, because here's the spiritual paradox that I believe in, and I'll just tell you straight out that I believe this. The short version of this is that human beings will never get off this planet because we'd screw up the rest of the universe. But there's another way to look at that, is that within the coherence, perhaps, of an entire universe in which there is wisdom and which there is nothing else but consciousness, there are maybe paradoxes, there are self-governing rules that say until a certain state of consciousness is achieved, these awarenesses will not be returned. And what the video of the eagle and the condor on the CollapseNet page, Yellow Bar, is all about is that in what all of the prophecies tell us is a coming golden age after major earth-shaking events to take place on or about December 21st, 2012 of this year. Of course, if I look at that objectively, from the stuff we've read about Fukushima and economy and climate change, we'll be lucky if we get that far. So we know something's coming. But on or about that time, we can expect to see something magic happen. And I would probably submit to you, my friends, you've been with me for a long time, that if you don't believe in magic, you're going to have a very hard time in some way, shape, or form. If you have never seen something amazing happen, and I have seen miracles happen a great many times, and my ability to do that, you know, a lot of my spiritual training came from 12-step recovery work, and I saw miracles of people being restored to sober states, to sane lives, healing when, according to all medical and other experience, they were hopeless. And yet we see miracles happen, and I've seen thousands of those. And it came from adopting a simple spiritual, simple spiritual positions. One of the first and foremost of which is you got to be completely beaten, because your brain will not open, or as Khalil Gibran said in The Prophet, your pain is the breaking of the shell which encloses your understanding. There are understandings that are available to us. There are understandings that are emerging, but there is a spirit also that is emerging, and you can hear it in me, and you can see it in some of the stuff we're bringing to you on CollapseNet. And this spirit is authentic. And those of us who have been like warriors on this, those of us who are committed to living as post-petroleum humans, understand the value of authenticity. As somebody once said, in this 12-step program I was in, if you don't tell a lie, you don't have to remember what you said. And the corollary to that is that you live coherently with your insides matching your outside, that you will have power, and you will have energy, and you will have force that you cannot have split. And that's why I call the boneheads who currently believe that they're in charge of this planet, I call them now the powers that were. They're doomed one way or another, but they are increasingly impotent. You can't listen to them anymore. You don't want to believe them anymore. And that's a sign that maybe we've had enough. And I've been privileged, and I'll shut up with this before I leave you and come back next week. I hope we have Michael Reynolds on next week. I have been privileged to know a great many soldiers, Marines, who have fought in combat. I've had my own experiences. And I think every one of them would say that heart is like, it's like it weighs nothing in your rucksack, but it can carry everything. And from what I have seen from some great heroes, Michael Reynolds has, you know, he's been through the crucible as bad as I have, and I'm really looking forward to sharing with him. I haven't got him yet, but when I get him, he's on. It's heart that has always made a difference, and that is an indisposable commodity. It is a commodity that we cannot do without, and all we've got to do is open ourselves up and let it find us. And you know, that's a great way to spend this beautiful Sunday afternoon in a lifeboat hour with all of you. I love you so much. We'll hopefully have some announcements about CollapseNet next week. But until then, this is Michael Rupert, and I'll be back with another episode of the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.